welcome to another episode here at Supernatural's Confessions Podcast, where it is a safe place for you to confess all your experience, be it supernatural, myths, urban legends, superstitions, or even the unknowns. And as a team, we'll compile and feature your confessions on our platforms. You may reach out to us through our Facebook page or website, supernaturalconfessions.com, and you are also invited to join us every Friday night on our Facebook Live, where Eugene, the founder of Supernatural Confessions, and I host a weekly live show discussing all about the supernatural. I'm Kim, your host, and now on to the show.
Is anyone here?
What did you find?
You are listening to Supernatural Confessions.
Hello, fellow listeners of Supernatural Confessions. Today's first story is not something that I have ever heard of. I'm not sure about you. But the next story is entitled The Scurrying Demon. The story is told by someone who just want to be known as Rahim. And the story is narrated by Keith.
This story took place in Batu Pahat, Johor Bahru, Malaysia, where I was staying with my parents and three sisters. There was a period of time where we were disturbed every night for almost a month. There were nights where we would experience strange noises in our house. The noises sounded like something scurrying around the house, even on our roof. There was this tick-tocking sound, like the sound of nails on zinc. At first, we would dismiss it as noises made by our cats, but as time went by, it got even worse. There was one occasion I was very sure I heard the noises coming directly from my bedroom, but when I went in to check, there was nothing. Apart from the noises, there was also a foul stench that came out of nowhere. We thought that maybe an animal had died under the floorboards or in the attic, but despite searching the whole house, we could not find the source. And strangely enough, the stench was not always persistent, appearing and disappearing at different times of the day. My father decided to seek spiritual help from a bomo to take a look at our house to find out what was the cause of these disturbances. I remember it was a Friday night when the bomo arrived. The moment he stepped into the house, he told us, "There is something which is not of this world that has taken refuge in your house." We were shocked to hear what he had told us. The bomo began his ritual of cleansing. He went to every corner and every room in our house. My father asked what was actually causing all the disturbances, and the bomo said that soon we will get to see its true form. The bomo chanted prayers, and to our surprise, we heard a scurrying sound coming from the kitchen towards the living room. What we saw was the most hideous thing, and I will never ever forget it. It was a hideous looking head connected to a hand. Get this, I'm not making this up. It was literally a head that was on a hand. My mother fainted and collapsed to the ground. My sister screamed hysterically. My father and I were just in shock and awe. How could that thing end up in our house? The bomo took a handful of salt out of his pouch, chanted over, and tossed it at the creature. It let out a horrible scream before disappearing. According to the bomo, the creature was a form of jinn, which was set free by its owner, and it was roaming around until it eventually chose to stay in our house.
If you cannot paint the picture of a head on top of a hand in your head, our member Shad Wilson actually portrays that greatly through one of his Facebook account called The Dark Arts of Shad Wilson, and it is posted in our SC private group, It Must Be the Hunter. If you want to take a look, just head over to Facebook and search the group. You are listening to Supernatural Confessions. If you have your own confessions to share, reach out to us on our Facebook or website, Supernatural Confessions. Remember, you are not alone. Right, because of the previous story comes from Johor Bahru as well, so I pick another confession that is posted by Jimmy Locke, entitled "White Lady Who Sat on a Fallen Tree Trunk in Our Backyard," also from Johor Bahru. In the late 70s, my parents, younger brother and I live in a rented single-story terrace house in Pasir Pelangi, Johor Bahru. There was a Malay village and an Orang Laut settlement nearby. All three were connected and also demarcated by some woods, with many monkeys swinging from tree to tree and also squirrels. Monitor lizards and tortoises were often seen in the river below. The Malay villagers were mostly kind and civilized. However, the Orang Laut tribespeople looked very different from us. They were mostly topless, had dark skin, body piercings, matted hair, with flies around their bodies, and spoke their own language that we did not understand. They carried hunting equipment like spears or blowpipes, dirty-looking babies, and also sometimes they have dead squirrels and fish with them. Most households stayed indoors after 6 or 7 in the evening, especially on a Friday night. We were told that bomos or witch doctors in the Malay village would release their ghosts or spirits every Friday night, and these things like to disturb or even attack children and pregnant women. It was also a common practice then to sacrifice little child to appease local spirits whenever a new bridge is constructed. The house had a big front yard and also a backyard. Mum was cooking in the kitchen one evening. After helping her to pound, which back then we were using traditional stone mortar and pestle, the ingredients for her cooking, I look outside of the metal gate towards the backyard that was overgrown with weeds and lalang. I saw a lady sitting atop of a tree trunk lying in the backyard. She had a long white hair and wore a big white dress with her back facing us. As I was just 5 or 6 years old then, I called out to the lady to warn her of the ants, frogs and mosquitoes in the backyard. My mum then asked me who was I talking to. I pointed to the tree trunk and told her about the naughty jie jie, which is elder sister in Mandarin, that was still sitting on the tree trunk and did not come inside the house after 6 p.m. I asked mum who was the jie jie. How did she enter the backyard when the back gate was locked? What was she doing on the fallen tree trunk? Why was her hair so long and white, and so many other questions? Mum then told me not to talk nonsense, insisted that there was no one in our backyard, and quickly pulled me into the living room. I did not fall sick or anything, but after that, I actually saw her a few more times, called and spoke to her every time, but she never responded. I guess for now, I would thank God that she did not respond. And later, Mum and Dad rented out a spare room to a young couple with a baby girl. The baby's mother kept hearing sound of women sobbing. She kept telling us about the sobbing sounds. We tried to listen very hard, very carefully, but we did not hear anything. Even her baby girl was crying hysterically in the house all the time, day and night. The couple moved out just a few days after they moved in. But our family lived there for 2 to 3 years without any disturbance. Oh!
you like the content here at the podcast, you are also invited to join Eugene and Kim, whereby they go live every Friday 10 p.m. Malaysia and Singapore time to dissect, discuss, and go deeper in detail about your confession. And I'll be waiting for you there.
So our next confession comes from Brandon Avril Gontier, which happens 15 years ago. It's a story about where he was attending a camp and he forgot his utensils and decided to go back and retrieve it himself and bump into something else while retrieving his utensils. Many that were students back in the late 2000s would have came to this building at Pasir Panjang for their school outdoor adventure camps. The place is fitted with all sorts of outdoor obstacles as well as rooms that could house many students. Back then, I was roughly 10 to 11 and was attending camp at this venue. My bunk was located on the third floor of this building, which is the top floor and situated in a room whereby it's somewhere in the middle. Given that it was a camp, everyone was expected to bring their own mugs for drinks and utensils during mealtime and to wash their utensils themselves after the meal. It was dinner time at around 7:30 or so, and we all gathered at the dining area on the first floor. It was then I realized that I left my cup and utensils back in my room and had to go back up to retrieve them before I could eat. As such, after receiving permission to retrieve my utensils, I made my way up to the stairs, which is located at the very end of the building. Not sure whether the building had just had no lights or whether the lights were just not switched on yet due to the time or due to the fact that everybody was sitting below. All of the lights were basically off at that point of time. Remember, the time is 7:30 or so. Walking up the stairs itself was creepy as I was the only person. And for some reason, every time I walk, I could hear footsteps. As well, even though there wasn't anyone following me. Chalk it up to my imagination or that it was echoes created in the empty and enclosed stairway, and I hurry up to the third floor corridor. Still extremely dark on the third floor corridor, but it wasn't as bad as the stairs as it was an open area, so I could somewhat see thanks to the moonlight. Anyways, continued walking and it still sounded like there was a heavy footsteps behind me. As if it was boots. And I hurried into my room where I placed my bag in and rummaged through my stuffs. My bag was placed at the front of the room, resting on the wall. Due to the darkness in the room, I find it quite difficult to locate my stuff as I rummaged through my bag. All of a sudden, there was this dim torchlight shining in my direction as I was going through my bag, creating a circular round light on the wall. The light was pointed at me from the back, so I had no idea who it was, and at this point, I had found my utensils and cup. So I turned back to see who was shining the light in my direction, expecting that it was another fellow student who forgot their stuff as well. So I turned back, but it was empty and dark. Nobody at all. I looked back in front. There was still this circular path of dim light, as though something was shining a light from the opposite end. I instantly grabbed my cup with the spoon inside and ran out of the room all the way to the stairs, jumping down a flight of stairs each time to get down to join the others as soon as possible. After that, I asked whether there is anybody else who forgot their stuff as well. And I was told that I was the only one. There you have it, a story told by Brandon when he went for camping. I'm sure a lot of us have such stories to share when it comes to camping in an estranged land. So if you have confession to make, remember, you can always drop it at our website or our Facebook account. All you need to search is supernaturalconfessions.com. So now we go to a confession that comes all the way from Penang, Malaysia. So this one, it's written by or confessed by Timothy Joshua Ignatius. The location was on the church grounds in Penang before it was developed. Let's say Timothy didn't mention any names of the church in Penang. There were still a lot of trees, especially banana trees. We camped beside my friend's house, which was actually beside the church grounds. We didn't have an actual tent per se, but I used an old cargo parachute as our tent. It was a huge red-colored nylon-like canvas. So in total, there were four of us. We set up our tent in between five or six banana trees. And later that night, we had some barbecue and then decided to turn in for the night. As we were sleeping, at around 2 a.m. in the morning, I suddenly heard a spine-chilling scream. Like as though a woman was being murdered. As I opened my eyes, I could see my friend, A, looking at me. I asked him, "Did you hear that?" He said, "Yes." We looked at the other two of our friends, but they were sound asleep. The scream sounded like it was coming from far away. We kept quiet for a while. Then we heard it a few more times. But the sound seemed like it was going further away. We tried peering through the nylon canvas, but could only make out the silhouettes of the tree as there were street lights nearby. We tried our best to ignore it, but about 15 minutes later, our entire tent was shaking and rattling like as though it was an earthquake. My other two friends who were sleeping jumped up with a fright and asked us what was going on. After the shaking and rattling subsided, we told them what happened earlier. After a long discussion, I decided we should get out of the tent and see what's going on. We tried to vote on it, but my other two friends didn't want to leave, fearing what could be waiting for us outside. After gathering some courage, I went out of the tent and looked around. There was nothing there. We immediately left the tent and went to my friend's house and waited until the next morning and we packed up our stuff. That incident really puzzled us for years as we tried to figure out what actually attacked our tent. I believe I may have found the answer when one day I came across this local TV show called Alarmistic or something. Can't really remember the name. They mentioned an interesting entity known as the Langsuye. They did say that if you can hear the Langsuye screams far away, that means it is nearby. So I really think it could have been the Langsuye. Now, a question to our listeners here on this podcast. Can you tell the difference between a Bontiana and a Langsuye? Listening to Supernatural Confessions. Whatever you don't see, doesn't mean it is not there. Now, for the remaining time we have for this episode on this podcast, we're going to go all confessions, all stories from Punggol. The first one to go is A Crying Ghost from Punggol by Ji Jun Huang. And this confession is narrated by Theo.
We recently moved into the new BTO flats near Punggol Settlement. I usually work late, and one night, as I was returning home from work, I walked through Punggol 17th Avenue, where the private estate is, and saw something that gave me goosebumps, even now as I'm telling the story. The time was a little past midnight, and before 1 a.m, I was walking past the Raffles Kids Childcare Centre. The street lamp was flickering, and the road was a bit misty. Suddenly, I heard a woman crying hysterically. The crying got louder and louder. I was the only one on the street at that time. When I heard someone shouting in Japanese, I don't understand what he was screaming, but he seemed very fierce. I looked around thinking it's the TV sound coming from one of the houses, but there were no occupied houses there. That was when, from afar, I saw a woman in traditional cheongsam behind the gate of a very old house. I panicked and started running down the street, past the house, and towards the direction of my home. The crying sound only faded away after I ran quite a distance past the house. I was seriously very, very scared. It's the first time I've seen or heard anything like this. I prayed and chanted all the way home. I showered quickly and went straight to bed. The next few days came down with a really bad case of fever. For nights after that, I would have recurring nightmares about the crying woman and the Japanese man. My mom brought me to an old temple in Punggol, and with the help of the temple medium, my fever eventually subsided. When the medium learned where I had my supernatural encounter, he nodded and said, "No wonder." Then he shared his memories about the Punggol Point area. During the Suk Ching massacre at Punggol Beach, the Japanese raped and murdered many villagers in that area. There are many mass graves around the place. Many of them were never officially documented. One of the mass graves was at the site directly opposite the childcare center. He said if you ask anyone staying there, 9 out of 10 of them would have experienced some degree of strange encounters there. There is also a church nearby. The choice to build the church there was to keep the angry spirits at bay, but clearly that had very little effect. According to the medium, he believes that is why many of the houses there were unsold, as those who are bantang or superstitious would avoid buying properties in that area. Although my fever has since subsided after my visit to the temple, the haunting nightmares never stopped. Each night when I tried to sleep, I would see the image of the screaming lady in cheongsam behind the gate. The temple medium told me the spirit needed my help because her soul was stuck in a tormented cycle. He asked me to return to the spot at 17th Avenue to burn a particular set of incense paper for her. I hesitated for a while as I was extremely scared of going back there. It took me a couple of weeks before I finally got the courage to go back there again, accompanied by the medium and one of the temple helpers. The weather seemed fine when we arrived, but during the prayer ritual, the cold wind suddenly picked up and it began to rain. A black cat walked over towards us and sat close by to watch us pray. Maybe it's a coincidence, but the temple medium said it was a sign. The entire ritual would take about half an hour and involve chanting and burning of hell money for the tormented soul of the crying lady. But the rain and the wind kept putting out the fire. We were forced to abandon the ritual when the rain got too heavy. The temple medium told me that this was a sign that the spirit or spirits in the area did not accept the offering. We waited for the rain to subside and left without completing the ritual. I really hope she can get out of this vicious cycle and be reborn again in a better world. I really wish I can help her, but it seems there are stronger forces at work.
There has been countless belief whereby people who die due to unnatural causes, like for example accident, or when you are actually murdered, or in this case a massacre, your souls wouldn't get to rest. There are also beliefs that actually mention that these people actually do not know they are actually long dead. You are listening to Supernatural Confessions. If you have your own confessions to share, reach out to us on our Facebook or website, Supernatural Confessions. Remember, you are not alone.
This confession comes from Meng, a 55-year-old property agent who enjoys fishing during his free time. And this is his story that he shared with us. I remember this was right after I finished National Service. A bunch of friends and I were looking for jobs, but we haven't been able to find any. So during our free time, we would usually go fishing. Usually the jetty area at Punggol Point would be quite crowded, so my buddies and I would go further down the left side to where it's more secluded. It was late in the night, this one particular fishing trip, and we weren't really sure what time it was. But by that point in time, the seafood restaurants around the area were already closed. So I think it was probably quite late, past midnight. One of our fishing rods caught onto something, and it started tugging. And the small bell that's attached to the rod made the ringing noise. It seemed like we had caught a big one. The more we pulled, the harder the fish fought back. Suddenly, we saw something emerging from the water. It was quite dark. Even though we had camping lanterns, it wasn't enough to illuminate what we had caught. Also, it was a bit weird. Like, why would the fish start floating out of the water? This thing, this fish, was black and rounded. It started rising up of the water slowly. Our first thought was that we had got our line caught in a floating debris. Maybe it was covered in seaweed. But from the way this thing floated towards us, it seemed to be somewhat alive. I mean, there's a difference when something is moving towards you and just randomly floating in the water. And this thing was definitely moving towards us. And as it got closer to us, it started to float even higher and higher until it was far above the water level. And that's when I felt something was very wrong. And I immediately told my friends to just drop their rods and run. However, for some reason, nobody seemed able to move. Everyone just stood there transfixed. And that's when we all heard it. A loud, sharp, ear-piercing scream. We all heard it at the same time, and we ran. The voice sounded human, but at the same time, it was nothing like I've ever heard come from a human throat. Just left everything behind and made a dash for the main road. I took a glance backwards while we were running away. And I saw, and I know this is going to sound crazy, but I know what I saw. I saw a head. A floating head. Just a head, no body, no legs. Just a head flying around our fishing spot where we were, and the head was screeching. We ended up at a small bus terminal area, and we quickly did some prayers at the altar there. Our hands were shivering, and the fear was very real. But at least there were more people there, and we felt safe. I have had strange occurrences throughout my army days and at other fishing sites before, but so far those were just sounds and weird feelings. I mean, it's one thing to be able to just hear and sense them, but this time I was able to see them and it was just too real. The sight of a flying head is not something I can try to rationalize or lie to myself that it's an animal. I know what I saw and I can't tell the difference between a bird and a head. Because none among us really wanted to walk back to the place at night and where our barang-barang were, we decided to wait till daybreak before going back. We spoke to some of the regular fishermen where we were and they told us that there's a very good reason why no one goes away from the jetty even though there's a chance of catching more fish. Because the location that we were, apparently flying head sightings were a common sight. And we eventually went back to our fishing site in the morning. We found our items had been ransacked. And the fishes that we had caught all had their heads bitten off. Today, Punggol Point Park looks nothing like what it did before. And the forested areas have been mostly cleared out. I do sometimes still go there to fish, but mostly just for nostalgia and for old time's sake. Most people don't remember what how Pogo Point was before, but the memory of that night and the memory of the flying head will live with me forever. Thank you, Ming, for sharing your story with us.
Fishing, fishing, but it's not the fish that came up. The confession that you just heard is actually in video form. So if you wanted to watch the video, just head over to our YouTube channel. Search for the same name, Supernatural Confessions. And with that, we have come to the end of this episode of Supernatural Confessions. If you have enjoyed this episode, please rate us with a 5-star review on whichever platform you are streaming this podcast on. Go on and tell your friends, families, and everybody about us. You can find more of our content on YouTube, Facebook, and also our website. Search for the keyword Supernatural Confessions. If you or someone you know have a confession to make, visit supernaturalconfessions.com. You can send it in text, voice, or even video format, and let us know if you want your identity to be kept secret. Supernatural Confessions is created by Eugene T. Until the next episode, my name is Kim, your host for this podcast series, signing off with whatever you don't see doesn't mean it is not there.